Hello, this is David Gordon Koch reporting from Moncton for the NB Media Co-op. The insurance industry has lobbied policymakers about pharmacare dozens of times since the election of Prime Minister Mark Carney in April 2025, according to a group campaigning for universal drug coverage. The Council of Canadians says it's deeply concerned that industry lobbyists who oppose universal pharmacare have influenced the federal government. The Pharmacare Act, which became law in October 2024, lays the groundwork for a national universal pharmacare program, with the first phase covering contraceptives and diabetes treatments. But so far, only three provinces and one territory, Manitoba, BC, PEI, and Yukon, have signed pharmacare agreements with Ottawa, and there's no new money for the program in the federal budget introduced in November. Federal lobbying records show that insurance sector representatives lobbied decision makers about pharmacare at least 53 times between April 28th and November 25th last year, according to a statement from the Council of Canadians. The lobbyists represented the Canadian Life and Health Insurance Association and several major companies, including Manulife, Canada Life, Sun Life, and Green Shields. For more on this story, I'm speaking with Nicholas Barry-Shaw, lead campaigner on pharmacare for the Council of Canadians. Thanks for joining us today, Nick.
Thanks for having me on, David.
So let's start at the federal level. Last month, you issued a statement detailing what you learned from the federal lobbying registry. Talk about the significance of these latest figures.
I want to open with just reminding people of the stance of the Carney government in the election, in the April election, which feels like eons ago, but is less than a year away from us. And in that election, you know, defending our public healthcare system, and in particular, protecting pharmacare, was one of the key planks of the healthcare platform of the Liberals and of Mark Carney. And they explicitly said, you know, you got to elect us, because if you don't, you'll end up with Pierre Poilievre, and he's going to try to privatize healthcare, and he's going to scrap this kind of nascent national drug plan that the Trudeau government had brought in, right? So that's kind of the context for a lot of this. And the Liberals had a caucus meeting in September in Edmonton, and I was part of a group of healthcare activists who went down to Edmonton and protested, because the Liberals seemed to be dragging their feet on keeping this pharmacare promise. And Mark Carney came out and said, don't worry, we're going to do it. We're going to implement pharmacare as quickly as possible. We're going to extend coverage to the other provinces that haven't gotten on board yet. You know, everything's good. And so that's really the context for when this lobbying campaign really ramps up, right? And so we looked at the federal lobbying registry, and we found that these companies and their industry association, the Canadian Life and Health Insurance Association of Canada, were lobbying, especially the health minister, her top aides, and people in the finance department about pharmacare. So these were specifically meetings that were about the pharmacare program and about the deals that were supposed to be negotiated in order to roll it out to the remaining provinces, right? And so we see this spike in the lead up to the budget, and the Liberals basically walk back that promise that they would roll it out. There's no new money in the budget on November 4th. And shortly thereafter, the health minister makes clear that they are not in talks with provinces to conclude any new deals. Even though there's enough money for a province like New Brunswick to get on board, they basically announced that they're freezing the program where it is, which is, you know, covering only one-fifth of Canadians and leaving basically everyone else out in the cold. And so, you know, looking at these lobbying numbers, it's pretty clear that they had a decisive impact on this kind of shift in policy on pharmacare. And I think it needs to be decried, because, you know, we've seen too many situations where governments promise a policy, they make commitments, and corporate interests are, you know, after the fact able to distort it or even, you know, turn it back by influencing policymakers behind the scenes.
And we'll talk more about the New Brunswick situation in a moment, but according to the data that you published, there was a pretty significant surge in activity in October last year, just before the budget came out. Isn't that right?
Yeah, absolutely. So this, you know, and again, it was targeting the health minister. her office and targeting the finance minister, who's responsible for drawing up the budget. And so the fact that there was not enough money in the budget, there's about $1.5 billion that's been allocated so far. And about two-thirds of that is spoken for. The existing agreements with the four provinces and territories have used up a certain amount of that money, but there is enough money left over. But, you know, if a big province like Ontario got on board with the program, then that money would not be sufficient. So that's something that the Council of Canadians and other organizations calling for this program to be expanded and extended to all Canadians have been calling for quite some time, is to say, you know, hey, let's be serious and let's put the money in, and then that will get the program rolling. That will get provinces coming to the table. We didn't see that, and I think it's a pretty clear indicator of the success that these lobbyists had with respect to a government that, you know, since it took office, has really been quite solicitous of the interests of corporations. They've had an open door policy for corporate interests, whether it be pipeline companies or the big banks, and we're seeing it's the case as well with the insurance companies.
We reached out to the main lobbying organization that you mentioned a moment ago, the Canadian Life and Health Insurance Association. They provided a statement calling the, quote, inferences in your release misleading, although they acknowledged that the business association meets with government on various topics, including pharmacare. So they didn't seem to deny the facts of the release in terms of the number of lobbying contacts. The statement said, I'm quoting here, there are 27 million Canadians who already have access to medications through employer-sponsored health benefits, and that's a foundation we must protect. Every Canadian, regardless of income and employment, should be able to get the medications they are prescribed. Now, it's unclear how the industry proposes to do that, to provide medication to every Canadian, as they say, regardless of income or employment, without universal pharmacare, but they seem to want to kind of preserve this sort of patchwork, as it's often described, of coverage in Canada. Now, the organization declined an interview request, but their comments do correspond with what's already out there on the public record from various industry groups, such as the Chamber of Commerce. Again, that Canada should maintain its patchwork of coverage that varies by province and territory. I want to get your thoughts on this, starting with the suggestion that private plans should be protected from universal pharmacare. Your response, Nick.
Yeah, I think this is a this is one of the scare tactics that the industry has tried to use to warn people off of a public drug plan, is they say that, oh, well, if we bring in public coverage for things like diabetes medications, for insulin, for contraceptives, which is the first phase of this pharmacare plan, it's going to somehow disrupt your existing coverage. So your workplace plan will somehow be affected. And I would just say, you know, look at any of the four provinces that have the program already. There are no stories coming out saying, oh my God, I lost my workplace insurance because the government created this program, you know, because our province signed up. And so I think it's completely empty scaremongering. And unfortunately, it works because they have a tremendous amount of resources and, you know, time and money to put into pushing this out. They kind of launder this argument through think tanks that they fund. So many of the right-wing think tanks that have been opposed to pharmacare are funded by the insurance industry. And so they have these people who pose as experts and who are actually, in fact, many times they're all pharmaceutical industry lobbyists or insurance industry lobbyists who are, you know, kind of moonlighting as senior fellows at the C.D. Howe Institute or things like that, and who will repeat this line. And so it has a kind of air of credibility, but there's nothing. You know, there's absolutely no substance to this argument. What a public drug plan will do is it'll provide universal coverage for those drugs, and starting with diabetes meds and contraceptives. And it'll just mean that you, if you have a workplace plan, you would pay less because you don't need to insure yourself twice when the public sector is providing access to those medications free of charge, right? And that's what they're scared of, is with as a public plan expands, it'll mean you'll need less private coverage and it'll mean less premiums for them. And I think that's really where, you know, when they talk about it's going to disrupt coverage, it's what it's going to do is it's going to disrupt their profits. It's going to disrupt their income. It's going to be cheaper for Canadians. It is going to be cheaper for the government. It's going to make our healthcare system stronger, but it'll be bad for them. It'll be bad for their bottom line. So I understand why they're opposed to this policy, but it's not at all credible.
On that point, it's been pointed out that the insurance industry stands to lose revenue through universal pharmacare because this kind of program tends to drive down prices. Can you elaborate on this point, how that works?
There's a few areas where we see very significant savings from a universal pharmacare program. One of them is just administration, right? It's very expensive to have, the 100 different provincial plans that we have for different, people with this disease or that disease, income tested and so on. And all that takes administration, right? You have to apply for it. You have to be eligible. You have to, with a universal healthcare system, that's what we see with respect to the states. It's a lot cheaper to just cover everybody, just in terms of administration costs. And that's what we would see with pharmacare as well. There's a big part of savings from lowering drug costs. Canada pays the second highest drug prices in the world. Mm-hmm. They're lower than the states, but they're significantly higher than in countries that have a national drug plan. And the reason for that is because those countries negotiate lower prices. They have this buying power that they can wield against the very large pharmaceutical companies to get lower prices for these drugs, right? And it's the same principle as why things are cheaper at Costco than at the dollar store or at the corner store. Mm-hmm. It's because they have this monopsony power. They can buy large quantities and negotiate a lower price. And that's something we're not benefiting from in Canada because we have this patchwork system. And I just, on the last really important point of savings is it reduces the number of hospitalizations, right? So people who are able to take their insulin, who are able to get the medication they need, are less likely to get sick, they'll stay in health longer, and they don't end up in the ER, right? And so this is really one of those easy fixes that we've known for a long time is something that's going to, not only save people money, but is also going to take some of the pressure off of our overburdened ERs and our healthcare workers that are struggling through a healthcare crisis. And we just haven't done it. We've kicked the can down the road for a very long time. And this is an opportunity to stop doing that.
And just to be clear, presumably, return to this point about protecting private plans, presumably those would eventually be phased out entirely if a universal pharmacare program were introduced in Canada, right? Because they wouldn't be required anymore.
They would be less necessary. I think the idea is you should have good drug coverage. You should have access to the medicines you need that are shown to be medically necessary under a public plan, and you shouldn't need private insurance. But most countries that have universal drug coverage also allow private plans. Your employers are allowed to, provide coverage for drugs that aren't covered by the plan, right? Or for co-payments that might exist. And so I think that's, that's also something that can be done. And I don't think there's a problem with that. I think the restriction is usually, there are some new drugs that are very expensive and that haven't been medically proven to have any benefits over existing drugs. This is something that drug companies do quite often. And if people want to pay for that out of pocket, if employers want to pay for it through private plans, then so be it, but the public plan should really cover drugs that work, that are medically necessary, and that show, meaningful benefit to the patients. But that's a long way off, right? We're starting very small. We're covering two groups of drugs at this point, which are very important and will have, I think, significant benefits even in the short term, covering diabetes drugs and insulin. And contraceptives. But we've always said we need to expand this program. This is really just a start, and it should be covering many other drugs.
All right, now I want to shift gears to the New Brunswick lobbyist registry. Unlike the federal registry, it doesn't track specific instances when lobbyists communicate with decision makers, but it does provide us with some insight into the activities of lobbyists in New Brunswick. So for example, the Canadian Life and Health Insurance Association, which we discussed earlier, currently has 7 people registered actively to lobby in New Brunswick. They were registered in May 2024. What is the significance of this in your view, Nick?
I think it's another piece of evidence that there's been this kind of push to stop the rollout of PharmaCare. They have dramatically increased the number of lobbyists registered in New Brunswick. So that was one of the things we found going through the registry, was that for a long time, since 2017, the insurance companies, through the CLHIA, had 3 lobbyists registered in New Brunswick. And basically at the moment when PharmaCare legislation is introduced in the House of Commons, a week later, they start registering new lobbyists, and it quickly jumps up to 11 lobbyists actively trying to influence the New Brunswick government. And one of the people they brought on, Tyler Campbell, was actually the former director of communications for the Higgs government, and actually longtime director of communications for the New Brunswick government. So someone who is very connected and has been on the political scene for a long time. That's an indication that they were pushing very hard. And we've seen a flip, unfortunately, in the positioning of the Holt government, which came to office promising free contraceptives and promising to do this through signing up to the federal PharmaCare program. In fact, even in one of their filings that I found, they even said it would be no cost because this is going to be a policy that'll be covered by the monies that we're going to receive from the federal government for PharmaCare, right? And since then, they've said, oh, we can't afford to do it. It's too expensive. And the health minister, John Dornan, has kind of repeated a lot of industry talking points saying, we don't like the program. It's too one size fits all, which is another kind of catchphrase by the industry that is pretty much meaningless. They say, we want to use the existing system. We're worried about disrupting people's coverage and so on. Downplaying the need for this program when we know that there are millions of people across Canada, and I'm sure tens if not hundreds of thousands of people within New Brunswick who are struggling to pay for their medications, who are having to make absolutely excruciating choices between paying for groceries, paying for the rent, or paying for their medications. And this program is really necessary to help those people, and pretending that the existing system is working well and that we don't really need to do anything to improve people's access to medication is really quite false.
Hmm. You pointed out a couple things there. I just wanted to note again, this Liberal Party campaign disclosure statement does indeed indicate that the free contraception promise that the Liberal Party's ran on will be cost neutral because it will be covered by the federal PharmaCare program. Definitely interesting as we look at how the debate about PharmaCare in New Brunswick unfolds, and indeed Tyler Campbell, formerly director of communications for the government of New Brunswick, now a lobbyist with Porter O'Brien, a consulting firm here in New Brunswick. He was indeed tasked with lobbying the government about PharmaCare specifically, as your research showed. And we have reached out to Porter O'Brien for comment, as well as the government of New Brunswick. So we'll update our story. We'll have our full story on nbmediacoop.org. And as you say, the Holt government has been lukewarm about national PharmaCare so far. The province said in September that Ottawa's proposal is not aligned with New Brunswick's current system, a means-tested drug coverage plan. In September, Provincial Health Minister John Dornan, who's also a physician, told public health care activists, as we reported at the time, that health insurance industry may respond to PharmaCare by eliminating private coverage for Ozempic. And that this could leave the province with a multi-million dollar gap in coverage, since Ottawa doesn't currently cover this kind of medication. So, Nick, I want to get your thoughts on this. Have you seen this kind of tactic, this alleged threat that insurance companies will withdraw part of their private coverage? I don't know, seemingly in retaliation for public offering. Your thoughts on that? Anywhere else in the country has this come up?
I think we knew that there was going to be a pushback from the corporate opponents of PharmaCare. These are kind of the hard-knuckled tactics that I would have expected from Big Pharma. The insurance industry has obviously gone the same route in this case. I was shocked when I read that. Honestly, that sounds like corporate blackmail, you know? And I think one of the reasons they're able to do it is that Canada's insurance industry is extremely concentrated. You know, there's basically three big firms, Manulife, Sun Life, Canada Life, that are, you know, controlled by, in some cases, extremely wealthy people. And Canada Life is in large part owned by the Desmarais family, which is a billionaire family here in Quebec. Haven't done the research on the other families that own those other insurance companies, but it's probably a similar story. And so they have enormous political clout, you know. But to be able to go to this point, to be threatening to just stop covering certain classes of drugs just as punishment, right, for a government adopting a public policy, that's outrageous. And I think the government should be, you know, and you know, the citizens of New Brunswick should be absolutely outraged that corporations are trying to influence public policy behind closed doors and basically get an elected government to go back on an election promise it made and to refuse to pursue federal monies that by all rights should be supporting New Brunswickers getting access to these medications, right? You know, the money is there. The provincial government has really a responsibility to go out and get that money. And if they're not because they're afraid of this corporate blackmail, you know, that's an outrage. And so, yeah, I was really shocked, and you know, I just want to congratulate you on that reporting, on bringing that up. Really shows the importance of independent media for breaking stories like this. And it's, you know, a discredit to the mainstream press for not picking up that ball and running with it, because they should be hounding the health minister basically every day about this. This is something that I was flabbergasted when I read that.
Well, thanks a lot, Nick. Is there anything else to add before we wrap up today?
I think I'd just like to close by saying, you know, this is part of a really long struggle, and we knew it wasn't going to be easy. The Council of Canadians has been advocating for a national drug plan for, you know, over 20 years. And this really goes back to the beginnings of our public health care system, where Tommy Douglas and the other architects of public health care recognized that we would need to cover pharmaceuticals, we would need to cover prescription drugs, because that is part of healthcare. And so this fight for making medicines part of Medicare is not over. It's clear that we're gonna have to continue pushing, but we've made headway on getting legislation, on getting 7.5 million people in Canada coverage under this national program. And we just need to keep organizing, keep pushing, get involved. You know, the Council of Canadians has chapters in New Brunswick. I'd encourage you to go to our website, canadians.org, to see if there's a chapter in your community. Get involved with the New Brunswick Health Coalition, and really join this fight, because I think it's up to us to carry these messages, to put pressure on our decision makers and not let the corporations kind of run things in the back rooms.
Well, I've been speaking with Nicholas Barry Shaw, researcher and lead campaigner on PharmaCare for the Council of Canadians, speaking to us today from Montreal. Thanks for joining the NB Media Co-op today, Nick.
Thanks for having me on, David.
Now, a few notes before we wrap up this report. As mentioned earlier, in September, Health Minister John Dornan told public health advocates that in response to PharmaCare in New Brunswick, private insurers may withdraw private coverage of Ozempic, which is a drug that is commonly used for people with type 2 diabetes to help lower their blood sugar levels. It's not part of Ottawa's PharmaCare plan, so the withdrawal of that coverage could leave a multi-million dollar gap in coverage in New Brunswick. Now, a spokesperson for the Canadian Life and Health Insurance Association said in an email that they haven't met with the health minister recently and they believe, quote, there may have been a misunderstanding. The statement referred to GLP-1, a class of medication that includes the brand names Ozempic, among others. The statement said in part that insurers will, in fact, continue to cover these drugs in all provinces and territories, including those that opt into the federal PharmaCare program. Now, regarding concerns about lobbyists in New Brunswick, the business association stressed that it's an advocacy group and that they register their staff with the federal government and all provincial governments. And as for the consultant firm Porter O'Brien, they did not respond to our interview requests. For the NBE Media Co-op, I'm David Gordon-Koch.